Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hey, welcome to Through the Smoke. This is Billy Goldfeder on Radio at Firehouse.com. A firefighter's love for the job. We're going to cover that in a number of aspects today as we go on. You know, I've got a lot of fire service books, starting with some books written in the 1800s, right up to some of the must-have books written by some fire service greats today. Does your library include authors such as Brannigan, Norman, Smith, Montagna, Salka, Brunacini, Dunn, Clark, Friedman, Carter, Coleman, Page, Murtaugh, Mittendorf, Richmond, Stapleton, McCormick, and Holbrook? Any names sound familiar? And while there's loads more, there's a new book coming out that caught my eye. It discusses the love for the job of being a firefighter. And while I haven't read it yet, I'm intrigued when somebody wants to write about the love for the job. Clearly, I've been ate up with this since I was a little kid. I was told in the 70s, you better slow down, you're going to burn out. I haven't burned out yet. So I would consider myself one who loves the job, no matter what. So this week I've got with me Chief Rick Lasky, who's going to talk to us a little while about his new book and what constitutes someone who loves the job, and basically what's Rick talking about, and how can he fill a book with comments about or ideas or suggestions or slams, who knows, about people who love or at least claim they love the job. And, you know, again, as I said, there are those out there who claim they love the job, and then there are those whose actions prove they couldn't give a damn, and they simply dress up as firefighters when the tones go off. So we'll be back with Rick in just a little while. Let's talk about some stuff that's hot. First of all, in New York, an update, a tenant in the Bronx building where two firefighters died after they and four other firefighters had to jump has been indicted on manslaughter charges. So nothing will bring back, of course, Lieutenant Kurt Myron and firefighter John Ballou, but at least something's being done to draw this issue to the public's eye. So maybe in the future they'll think a little bit before they start making modifications to buildings and other illegal-type changes such as that. Good news out of Providence, Rhode Island. The firefighter who had a heart attack at the scene of a fire a week ago is improving. Firefighter Ken Baker is improving. He's regained consciousness and is talking, according to Paul Dowdy, president of IAFF Local 799. As you read on Firehouse.com, Baker collapsed and was stricken with a heart attack while at the pump at a fire. He was at the pump at the fire. And what happened was, when he went down, and other firefighters went down as well, due to smoke inhalation, the doctors at this hospital they took him to decided to test the firefighters for cyanide, which is not normally tested, and they found out that, yeah, they did. Well, it should come to no surprise to any firefighter that when you're breathing the crap that we have out there today, there's cyanide in there. So maybe responding companies arriving on the scene of a fire from now on should sound something like this. Engine 1 to headquarters. Engine 1's on the scene. 2.5-story wood frame. We've got cyanide showing. I don't know. Maybe that'll get us to think a little bit. But we are glad that the firefighters in Providence are doing better. You know, just a few weeks from now, it's FDIC time, and our annual pilgrimage to FDIC is right around the corner. We look forward to seeing the annual Chief Ray Downey Courage and Valor Award that'll be presented this year. Don't forget to go to the Stop, Drop, Rock and Roll event on Thursday night. That's April 27th at FDIC to support the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. It's a night of good fun, good music, and good times as American LaFrance hosts this annual National Fallen Firefighters Foundation fundraising bash at the Indianapolis Marriott. Again, that's Thursday night at FDIC. And all proceeds from that evening will benefit the National Fallen Firefighters Memorial Fund. So we look forward to that. And a little FDIC history. Did you know that FDIC started in 1928, was originally hosted by the insurance industry, and it was first held in Chicago? Eight fire instructors hired to train firefighters throughout the Midwest were brought together by the Western Actuarial Bureau for the purpose of standardizing and upgrading fire department functions. There's a concept. With the exception of 1933 during the Depression, the FDIC has expanded every year and was hosted for many years by ISO, the Insurance Services Office. And then ISFSI took it over in 1978. And now, of course, Penwell runs FDIC. Personally, I've got all sorts of great memories of my first FDIC, which was in 1977. And I remember the instructors hauling boxes and boxes of slides with their own projectors and carousels to use in their classes. FDIC sure changed a whole lot. The exhibit hall back then had about 24 pieces of apparatus. So we look forward to seeing some of you out at FDIC this year as well. Another bit of good news, the near-miss reporting system has reached 700 reports. That means firefighters are taking the National Firefighter Near-Miss Reporting System seriously. So take some time yourself and check it out, www.firefighternearmiss.com. www.firefighternearmiss.com. Check out the near-miss reporting system. That's a joint venture with folks from the IAFC, the IFF, and many other fire and non-fire organizations such as NASA, the Airline Pilots Association, and related other organizations that are involved in putting together a near-miss reporting system. And hopefully we'll have them back on soon for an interview maybe this summer to see how the project's coming along and what they've been up to. You know, I don't know what it's going to take. The issue of us wearing seatbelts is no question a pain in the ass. Putting a seatbelt on while trying to respond to a fire is difficult, cumbersome, and I know there's going to be some meetings coming up at FDIC amongst some manufacturers and some folks from other organizations, including the IAFC Safety, Health, and Survival Section, to talk about securing firefighters in the cab. But we keep getting hurt and killed because we're not wearing our seatbelts. So I don't know if the answer is you pack up when you get there, or you get bigger seatbelts or wider seatbelts or whatever it is, but, you know, door latches are going to open up. We're going to fall against them and fall out. The only way to prevent that is, of course, having better door latches, but the primary means of not getting tossed out of your apparatus or your car is to wear your seatbelt. Over the weekend, a volunteer fire company in Pennsylvania was responding to a fire call, and while en route to this call, their tower ladder was making a turn when the officer's side door opened up, causing the firefighter riding in the front seat to be ejected from the vehicle. The firefighter ejected sustained serious injuries, including a broken pelvis and fractured tailbone. The reason this information is being shared is because no one seemed to care about it. The folks apparently involved in this were like, oh man, it's part of the job. You got to be kidding me. Part of the job, a broken pelvis? Broken pelvis and fractured tailbone suck. So you need to think. You're going to, you know, in most cases, you guys and gals out there know, and I know, many of the runs we're going to are predictably BS. It doesn't mean we act any less prepared, but we need to prepare ourselves. And, you know, I mean, if this firefighter was killed, is that truly a line of duty death? Yeah, I guess it is in some respects, but man, it sure could be avoided. We'll be back in just a minute. We're going to talk, before we go on with Chief Lasky, we're going to talk for a few minutes about a recent decision that was made regarding a 14-year-old member of a fire company who was killed, quote, in the line of duty. We'll be right back.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
During the break, I was chatting with Rick a little bit, and he brought up a great point. Rick, go ahead, and I'll surprise you now. Repeat what you just said. We were talking about the seatbelt issue.
Well, when it comes to making good decisions as a firefighter, what I'm always amazed with, Billy, is when we go to a bad accident, it's not just here in Louisville, it's just about anywhere, you'll hear the firefighters and the officers, you know, over and over again saying, if these two little kids or mom would have just had her seatbelt on, if they just would have had their seatbelt, there would have been no ejections from the car, just if they had only worn their seatbelts. And then they get back on the pumper, they drive back to quarters with no seatbelts on. It's kind of like the cop that goes out and arrests people for drunk driving, and then after work goes out with all his buddies, you know, gets drunk and gets in his own car and drives. It's kind of frustrating, and it comes down to making good decisions.
Well, and that's right. We've all done it, at least the seatbelt part. And you know, it's sort of like the firefighter reprimands his kid when he catches him smoking. Well, and then the day before you went into a building and chose not to wear your mask, but yet you were breathing that cyanide crap and the other nonsense that's in the smoke. So, you know, before we go on to discussions about the teenager line of duty death in Pennsylvania, there's been another bit of news out there that many of you follow that story in Long Island where the firefighters and fire districts and stuff were sometimes justifiably, sometimes unjustifiably nailed by the Newsday articles regarding the fire service up there. But they are working on tightening things up, and you know, for the most part, the Long Island fire departments are no different than yours or mine. They're doing a great job, and the service gets done. But unfortunately, some have forgotten the mission, what they're there for. And when you've got fire commissioners buying themselves cashmere jackets, but yet they have no one on duty to get trucks on the road, and they continually fail to answer alarms, something's wrong with that picture. So hopefully, that'll change that. But you know, in typical fashion, the media is going to slam as much as they can in some respects, and you know, sometimes it's justified. In a lot of cases, they broad brush everybody, and they all take a hit. Looks to me, though, from talking to folks up there and from visiting and stuff, that for the most part, the communities are supporting their fire departments as they should. Additionally, traditionally a very strong volunteer component in Long Island, many of the districts are looking at hiring people. You know, it's not the end of the world when you hire somebody. You can maintain all the good traditions of your fire department as long as you don't forget the mission you're there for. And that's when Mr. or Mrs. Smith or Jones or whatever you want to call them calls 911. If you can't get a truck on the road, none of all the other crap you're doing matters. That's got to be with trained and qualified firefighters, of course, as well. Let's talk for a minute about the Pennsylvania teenager, Christopher Kangas, who tragically was killed 4 years ago by a car while riding his bicycle to answer an alarm. Christopher Kangas' mother now can say that her son was a firefighter. Until last week, the U.S. Justice Department had denied the 14-year-old junior firefighter that title, saying that he was not a firefighter. Now, he again was struck and killed 4 years ago by a car while riding his bicycle to answer a fire alarm. Without the title of firefighter, he was not eligible for the federal, or his family was not eligible for the federal death benefits, which was obviously very important to his mom and fellow firefighters, and his name would not have been inscribed in the National Fallen Firefighters Memorial. But last week, after years of hearings and appeals, a U.S. Court of Federal Claims judge said this kid deserved to be treated better. The judge said Christopher Kangas died in the line of duty and was a firefighter authorized to be at the fire scene and perform duties as a part of a team engaged in the suppression of fires at the time of his death. And obviously the mom was happy. She said she was in shock, and she, you know, was glad that that they found for her and for her son and that sort of thing. And it's important, obviously, to the family, and we certainly appreciate what they've been through. But this really creates a lot of discussion amongst us as firefighters. You know, I'm looking at some other quotes here and stuff. Phil Stittleberg, who we've had on the radio show with us, chairman of the National Volunteer Fire Council, he said when Chris Kangas responded to a fire call and died tragically as a result, he was no different than any of the more than 100 firefighters who die each year risking their lives to protect lives and property. And it obviously angered his fire company that he belonged to also that the family's claim was denied. Although as a junior firefighter he couldn't go into burning buildings, he did contribute to the overall effort of that fire company, and the ruling said that he was part of a team in fighting fires. But we need to also think about this. What is a line of duty death? And in that subject is so much discussion, and we could spend months talking about this amongst each other. Now, in this case, basically what they've said is that because he was a member of the fire company responding to the station and he was hit, he is considered a line of duty death, and that's understandable. But now, what does this do in the future? Does this mean, and again, now don't go crazy on me, but let's take a look at, say, auxiliaries or ladies auxiliaries who play a very vital role in fire services, whether it be career or volunteer. If a ladies auxiliary member who is a member of the fire company or your fire department goes to your station, picks up the canteen truck, takes the canteen truck to a fire scene and is struck while doing that, is that a line of duty death? And I don't know. I mean, some of you are saying yes, some of you are saying no, and it's an interesting issue and one that maybe needs to be discussed or maybe it needs to be left alone. But I certainly want to think about it, and one of the reasons we have this show is it gives me an opportunity to think out loud, and that's what I'm doing, wondering what are the impacts. What about the 75-year-old person directing traffic at the scene of a fire who has a heart attack? Did the scene cause the heart attack, or was it someone's time to go? Again, don't go too crazy, although we certainly welcome your comments, and you can comment on the bottom of this webpage here. Let us know what you think. The issue of what is a line of duty death. The other subject that's come up, that will always come up in this type of discussion, is on-duty death versus line of duty death. If I'm exercising at our firehouse and I drop dead of a heart attack, right now it's considered a line of duty death. Compare that to the kid riding his bicycle to the firehouse to an alarm to help out who's struck and killed, and compare that to a firefighter rescuing a child and getting caught in a flashover. All very, very different, but all certainly lending themselves under to fall under the umbrella of line of duty death. Some people say we could reduce line of duty deaths just by looking at the numbers of what we classify a line of duty death. If an apparatus runs over a firefighter because they didn't follow backing procedures, is it a line of duty death or an on-duty death, or is it a stupid, unnecessary death? So do what you want with it, think what you want, take it where you want, see how it applies in your department. But I think it's worthy of discussion and worthy of thinking about this whole thing. What about your child labor laws? How does it work? It says in Pennsylvania, no minor under 16 years of age shall be employed or permitted to work within certain periods of time and under certain conditions. So what is it in your state? How does it fit in your area of the country? And you know what? Maybe we have more important things to worry about, and we certainly do. Who wants to deny any family of any firefighter their due? But it's in contrast sometimes with the numbers of line-of-duty deaths. And when you sit and look at a line-of-duty death in our country, and understanding all firefighters are heroes when they join, even the kid who joined in Pennsylvania, he gave of his time to his community, and therefore he is entitled to it, and certainly a judge has decided that. But it opens up the window for a lot more thought and discussion. Does any member of any fire department or company in any status or level going to the firehouse to help out an alarm fall under line of duty death? Maybe it does, and maybe we don't worry about those numbers. Maybe it's not a big deal. Maybe with this change we're going to see an increase in line of duty deaths, and many of us will kick and scream saying, look, the numbers have gone up. But maybe they haven't. It's just how we're managing the numbers. We'll be back.
Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
Without a doubt, the tragic loss of Chris Kangas in Pennsylvania affects all of us, and certainly whether he's a junior firefighter or a senior firefighter, the kid wore our emblem, and we certainly offer our hearts and prayers out to the family. Here's a few comments we've gotten on this that we've gotten from people regarding this issue. Here's one who wrote in, personally, I was torn at first. He was a junior firefighter. However, from all accounts, he was a responsible, enthusiastic member of their fire department. Even at a young age, he was a dedicated firefighter and dedicated to serving his community. That's a firefighter. That's from someone in Arkansas commenting on that. Here's someone from New Jersey. A 14-year-old boy should never, ever be put in a position where he would risk his life. OSHA does not allow a child to work with dangerous things like power tools and power equipment. In most states, this kid would not be allowed to work a cash register at a Burger King past certain hours. So perhaps his life should never have been placed in jeopardy. The PSOB is designed to assist families of public safety professionals sworn to protect life and property. I'm not sure that the people who wrote that would ever had the intent that this would consider a young child riding his bicycle to the firehouse struck by a car. So there's some interesting comments from people who've been following the issue and reading it and things like that. So again, it's worth thinking about, and thinking about your own fire department. Do you have junior firefighters? What are the rules? How do they function? Can they ride the trucks? Is it legal? When's the last time your legal department or your fire department attorney took a look and to the different roles of members? Maybe you don't have that. Maybe you don't have juniors. Maybe you don't have auxiliaries. Maybe you don't have special firefighters, things like that. But for those of you out there that do, it certainly may be worth taking a look at that. So we'll leave that and see where it goes from here. The firefighters' love for the job. We want to welcome Chief Rick Lasky. Rick is an old friend of ours and the fire chief of Lewisville, Texas, and we're going to talk with Rick in just a few minutes. Well, what's on your bookshelf? What are you reading, firefighters? What are you people out there reading? And I'm talking about the fire stuff, not other trash you look at. But building books out there on the collapse of burning buildings, safety and survival on the fire ground, firefighter rescue and survival, some outstanding books. Fire Command, what about Skip Coleman's incident management for the street smart fire officer? John Salkas, First In, Last Out, Managing Major Fires, Collapse of Burning Buildings by Chief Dunn. There's so many books out there. Then there's the manuals, the IFSTA manuals and some of the other ones that have come out in the last couple of years. Frank Brannigan's Building Construction for the Fire Service, Fireground Size Up by Mike Turpak. There's a lot of great books out there. There's some new books coming out, too. There's going to be a new book coming out, too, called Fighting Fire Safely. It doesn't sound all that exciting. Actually, the title is called Safe Firefighting. I want to read it just to see what it's about. And it's going to have three volumes talking about first things first, and others preparing your organization to respond. Volume 2 is going to be inside operations, and Volume 3 is a leadership focus. It should be an interesting book that's going to be out there soon that we'll talk more about in the future. So what are the top books out there? I talked to Ira, who runs FSP Books, which is fire-police-ems.com, and you can see the link right here at the bottom of our show. And what are the top 15 books that he's selling? Well, First Responder by Brady, Essentials of Firefighting by IFSTA, Pumping Apparatus, IFSTA, Hazmat, IFSTA, Engine Company Operations, IFSTA, Inspection and Code Enforcement, IFSTA, and Company Officer, IFSTA. So somebody's studying. Building Construction books are up there. Collapse of Burning Buildings, a big one. The Instructor book from IFSTA. Fire Engineering's Fire Officer's Handbook of Tactics. Fire Command, which is Chief Brunicini's book, and the Fire Chief's Handbook are all the hottest books. And they said that the largest category of books is definitely recruit training, which is the IFSTA Essentials and other publishers' Essentials that are out there, too. And there's some great options out there these days as well as far as the Essentials books. So there's also been a lot of hazmat books sold, rapid intervention, but they see a definite trend toward more technical books, such as dealing with collapse and technical rescue. A good example of that is the new Urban Search and Rescue and Collapse Structures book out there. So, you know, I got to be honest, I have not read a whole lot of technical books in a long time. If I'm taking a course or we're doing something at the fire department, certainly I'm following that along. But I'm more apt to read some of the other books that have been coming out. Now, there's a new book coming out by Steve Chikorotis in the Chicago area. Steve's coming out with a book that is called Firefighters from the Heart, and it's true stories and lessons learned from firefighters. And Steve's a battalion chief with the Chicago Fire Department. And it's basically 46 stories in his book where firefighters are going to share their experiences. So that should be real interesting. But let's focus on the newest book that's going to be coming out soon, and that's by our guest, Chief Rick Lasky. Rick, welcome.
Thank you, Billy.
Tell us about the book. What's up? Why this book? Firefighters, love for the job? That's a big question these days with some people.
Well, and this all kind of happened kind of on accident, if you will. Back in February 2001 at FDIC, I was asked to deliver a keynote by Peter Hodge, our good friend. I know you're good friends with Peter. And he said, we want you to do a keynote on that thing you do. And I said, what thing? He says, you know, that thing. And I said, what thing? And he said, well, you know, where you get on your soapbox and you go off about, you know, firefighters that don't love the job and chiefs that don't take care of their guys and so on. And I was a little surprised. I said, I don't think anybody really wants to hear, you know, someone, you know, raised on the south side of Chicago get up there and go on and bellyache about that. And he says, no, I think they do. And we did it, and so far it's taken on kind of its own life, if you will. But it's just basically, Billy, getting us back to where we need to be before it's all gone.
Where do we need to be before what's all gone?
Well, and it started to kind of flow. I went out there to do my thing, and then I just kind of walked around and talked about the love.
Spouted
for
it off.
And that was it. I mean, about our mission and what our mission really is. And you can't understand what the mission of the fire service is unless you understand our heritage, you know, the history, you know, understand the efforts that were made by those that have bled and sweat and died before us, and those that will go, unfortunately, in the future. Unless you truly understand what we're all about, and that's basically taking care of family, we're kind of like a bunch of ducks wandering around in a thunderstorm.
Share the mission. When you talk about the mission, I mean, we all have mission statements, and personally my opinion is most mission statements are bullshit. People have forgotten what the mission is, and usually they're written by the city manager and his staff, and you're told, here, this is your mission statement. To me, the mission is simple, and then I'll let you comment. To me, when someone calls 911, we need to arrive well-staffed with well-trained leaders and equipment that actually starts and runs, with radios that can communicate and people that basically have an idea what they're supposed to do when they get there. Basic customer service stuff. If we can turn that person's day around, then we've accomplished the mission. And we have two customer groups. Number one is our customer group of our personnel. Got to take care of our people. But, Rick, that's tough, especially the fire chiefs who don't have good relationships with their people. It's not always the chief's fault. And part two, of course, is the other customer service group, those who dial 911. And I've always said, if we take care of the first group, the second group will take care of themselves. What do you think?
And if we can establish that attitude, Billy, again, going back to why this all started in the first place, a few years ago I was sitting at a conference and Ben Franklin walked out. Not to lie, you know, he's not the real guy. He's dead.
Right.
We know that. But the actor and a young firefighter sitting next to me said, "What's with the old guy?" And I kind of leaned over and said, we need to talk at a break here. And a lot of our young firefighters coming on the job don't understand where it all started and what we're all about. And we've kind of forgotten that, you know, that whole public servant thing, being a servant to the public, that we owe them first. That if you got into this job to get rich, I don't know how you passed your psych exam. Whether you're a volunteer or paid firefighter, and we could talk about the national crisis facing the volunteer fire services in a way of recruitment and retention and the challenges those folks have. And there's some wonderful people out there doing that, but they definitely have a battle in keeping you know, people coming in and interested. But I think we're missing right off from the beginning our mark with educating, or at least sitting down and explaining to our young firefighters what this job's about. And basically, and you're right on with the mission, you know, statements. Somebody did a class, I think this all started back in the mid-'80s, on writing mission statements, and they filled up three walls worth of stuff. It takes 9 coffee cups to put it all on. And nobody even understands it. And if you don't even understand or can't describe part of your own department's mission statement and how that vision upholds it, how can you really believe in what we're all about? And it comes down to, Billy, guys not understanding what our uniform stands for and some of the different things in the fire service. It's all, if we don't continue to educate our young guys coming on, the young men and women that are taking on that role now as firefighters, to where it all came from, then we might as well just throw out all the uniforms and wear civilian clothes with a name that says, "Hi, my name's Chip," and be done with it.
Let's start from the beginning, Rick. How do we recruit the good ones? Let's start there, and then maybe we can scan through some of the chapters in your book, and you can share with our readers what you're trying to get across to them. But, you know, I was actually at our firehouse last night. We were doing some rookie training, and while the training was going on, I was actually cleaning out my car, and I was talking to one of our firefighters that came up just to wander, and he was actually talking about some future career goals. And I told him that, you know, the things I look for is attitude. And he says, "How do you measure attitude?" He says, "I don't know." I told him, "I don't know. I can generally tell by talking to you in the beginning. You know, whether you wore a suit today tells me a lot. How much college have you taken? What courses have you done to show me you want to come work here?" But, Rick, what are your comments? How do you, what's your advice to the chiefs listening and others listening, and maybe those who want to get hired somewhere? How do you pick the good ones?
Well, and I think, first of all, Billy, you got to look at your process. And I know some of us have to work within the civil service, you know, arena, and some not. But I really think it gets back to the type of reputation you have. I think the type of enthusiasm, the attitude. There are places. I'll give you an example. We've got some young firefighters here, several that have left other departments making $9,000 and $10,000 a year more than they would make here, but they want to come here And it's not because of me. It has nothing to do with me. It's because of the team we have here and the kind of go-to people, our company officers and the firefighters that we already have here, that they want to be part of an organization. They want to play firefighter. And I don't mean that derogatory. I mean they want to do the things they grew up reading and listening and hearing about, you know, in the books, from their parents, on television, all those things they envision themselves doing as a firefighter. And I think a lot of chiefs have taken that out of the picture. And we'll talk a little bit later, obviously, about the role of the chief. But I look for someone who's enthusiastic. I look for someone that's going to come in. And we actually do our process a little bit different. When we get to our chief's interview, we've got a panel that interviews that candidate, that young firefighter. And then they turn to me, and I kind of go through my spiel about pride, honor, and integrity. And I explain each one of those. And that is the foundation. That is the our values for our mission statement, for our department. You'll see it everywhere. Pride, honor, integrity. And I talk about the fact that we're in the integrity business, that we're the ones that the public holds above reproach. We're the ones that they give the keys to all the businesses. We're the ones they hand their child to and say, here, we're in houses with money, jewelry, everything else. We have to be the ones they trust. You turn to television, every other commercial has a firefighter, a fire truck, from hemorrhoid medicine to sandwiches to whatever, to coffee. It doesn't, because Fortune 500 companies, Billy, have realized that we have a marketing strategy and ability that they would kill for. The American Fire Service family, the North America, is an incredible, incredible marketing tool when it comes to integrity and honesty. Now, we've got a few that struggle and stray once in a while, but we're first to jump on them. But I think if we're looking for firefighters that are willing to fit in those categories, and I explain to these young firefighters, Billy, I tell them, this is what's required of you to be part of this family, to be part of this very, very special organization, because quite honestly, when you look at what we do, our best day is that person's worst day. We're at our best when they're at their worst.
Absolutely.
And if you're not willing to step up and accept those guidelines, those responsibilities, live by those principles, then we need to shake hands and say, you know, good luck, and I'm sure someone else will hire you, and I'll see you later on. We'll have a cup of coffee. But
let's address that for a minute. The fire chief that wants to have this flavor in his department and or her department, whatever the case may be, and they've got some problem children in the department, and their attitudes suck. They're doing their job, they're meeting the minimal qualifications, but their attitudes just suck. What do you do about it?
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with who we've got leading the troops. I've said before, our most important asset in the fire service are our firefighters.
But you're not talking about specifically the fire chief. The chief could be a great chief, but maybe it's a lieutenant or captain that's the problem?
Billy, a good friend of mine and a good friend of yours, Donnie Hade, battalion chief in SOC in New York City, years ago taught me a very valuable lesson, and I use it all the time. And he said, you know, don't look at the company and say that's a dog company. Don't get on the guys, get on the company officer. And let me back up for a second.
That's a great comment, and I'll share something with you in a minute. Go ahead.
Well, Billy, it comes down to, you know, again, our firefighters are our most important asset. Our chiefs. Here our staff chiefs, there's 8 of us on days. Our job is to go out and get the guy's stuff. We're the support mechanism. We're the supporting cast, if you will. And the battalion chiefs are the coaches. But it's the company officer. There's our go-to guys. They're the ones that set the tempo. And this doesn't matter whether it's your volunteer department and you've got that company or that leader for that engine or squad or ladder or rescue or whatever you refer to it as. This is the person that sets that whole tempo and a lot of times the attitude. And you, if you can create that atmosphere and you can kind of hold some people accountable, but I think it gets back to explaining and defining what your expectations are. We don't do that. We don't sit down with our young firefighters the first day and tell them why we take care of the rigs, and it's not just an image thing, why we take care of our tools and each other and the firehouse is our home. And I learned a very valuable lesson again with Bill Allen, my first lieutenant, who sat me down and told, he says, look, I know your dad was a fireman, great guy, but understand this is why we do it here, kid. And he pointed to Danny Godfrey over in the kitchen. He said, that guy right there has got 32 years as a firefighter. If I ever see him standing at the sink washing dishes or pouring his own cup of coffee and you're there, I'll have your ass. You know, you'll take care of him. That's called respect. He's earned it. And when I was done, I didn't want to go to EAP and look for counseling. I wanted to run through fire with this guy, Billy. I did.
You weren't too sensitive to have that kind of conversation.
No, I was I couldn't sleep that night. I was so excited.
Let's jump back to the company officer issue for a minute, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I had a good discussion with Dr. Dennis O'Neill, an old friend, and someday maybe we'll get Dennis on the show, and I'll divulge a secret of where I first met Dennis, and it has all to do with books, and it's funny we're talking about books today. But I talked to Dennis a few weeks ago. We were just kind of BSing a little bit, and I said to him, you know, I'm thinking about writing a piece called Let's Shut Down the National Fire Academy. And, he, you know, he's always willing to listen, and obviously I'm not proposing anything like that and wouldn't even think of that. However, maybe there needs to be just one course. One course. Now, before I go any further, anyone listening, or Rick or any of you, write down when you have time what the problems are in the fire service and your station, your department, and then look at where the best ability or what position is most able or has the most opportunity to fix the problems, and that's the company officer. It's the officer riding the front seat, the officer in the firehouse, etc. And we do little to no training nationally to prepare people to become company officers. And my thoughts were to Dennis was the National Fire Academy needs to come up with a class. I don't know, is it 6 weeks, 10 weeks? Hell, I don't know. That if and damn it, have Congress pass the law. If you're going to be a company officer in the United States, you must have this class. Paid, volunteer, unpaid, poorly paid, I could care what you do. But what if you're riding the apparatus, you need to take this course. And it would have first 5 minutes of tactics, meaning what do you do with the first 5 minutes until the rest of the infantry gets there? What do you do with personnel issues? How about company training? Whatever the issues are, I pulled together a whole bunch of experts, put them in a room for a few weeks, and let them invent this new course. But I'm fired up about it because I really think there's a great value. If there could be a course called Company Officer that had to be taught or had to be taken in order for you to ride that front seat, I don't know. I think a lot of problems would be solved. What do you think?
Well, Billy, it's kind of ironic that you bring that up, because I know both you and I have talked about this before, as well as our best buddy and best friend I've ever had my entire life, John Salka. Have talked about the fact, and I did it again this last weekend in Indiana, and everywhere I go, I ask the question, you know, when you got, how many people in here are company officers, or, you know, what class did they send you to? When you took that role right before, aside from a canned program, what did they send you to, you know, that covered everything from just what you said to performance evaluations to handle and roll call to planning your day to preparing for your new firefighter's first day, for preparing for that company officer's first new day. And everywhere that John and I go, I know we, you know, after we get done doing one of our programs, one of them is Five Alarm Leadership, where we cover a lot of different issues, and we've actually put together a program just because of that called the Fire Officer Training Project.
Yep.
And it's kind of where you can go shopping. It's either 8, you know, 16 or 24 hours for the company officer and or for the chief officer, and you can select what you need in the way of you know, we've never done this with our guys. You know, no one's ever sat down and explained the importance of the roll call or how to plan your day.
Right. And you know, the materials are out there. And any department that wants to put out a program can contract with any instructors out there or do it yourself. This is basic stuff. The fact of the matter is, as you said, it's not being done. And we're not putting people through this training. I mean, what's the qualifications to become a lieutenant in your department? Maybe
and
it's
it
an
varies.
Election. Maybe it's a test. Yeah, right. There's no standard.
It varies I mean, Billy, you've been around, you know, coast to coast, and it's amazing to go from one state where they're heavy in certifications and training, you go to another, and there's nothing.
Well, you know,
you're exactly right.
When I bring it up, it's going to take time. Let me tell you something. We're sending everybody and her brother to Alabama and Tuscaloosa and this town and that town to learn WMD and terrorism. And I understand that's important. But how do you expect these people going through terrorism training and WMD and all this other stuff to function if they don't have the basics to handle themselves at a house fire, a car fire, an auto accident, and the day-to-day operations of a firehouse? It ain't going to happen.
And there's a quote that we love to use, and when it comes to, you know, things take time. We're kind of used to now, a lot of our firefighters, to wireless internets and Palm Pilots and
right.
and instantaneous things that sometimes change, and sometimes the effect of change takes a little bit of time, and it's kind of like the mentoring, or when you expect to see something. And if you remind me, I'll tell you a little story about Eddie Buchanan asking me about when are we going to start seeing some good chiefs, you know, really start heading up the ladder. And I said, you know, it's kind of like that mentoring and make things happen thing. That the quote we like is, one generation plants the trees while another enjoys the shade. you know, if we don't start now with something,
absolutely,
every year is going to go by, Billy, exactly what you're saying. And we're just, next year we'll be talking about the same thing, and 5 years from now, and there'll be something else besides WMD that'll be the headliner for a while, and the rest of the stuff will continue to slide. And often the fatalities we talk about, if you look really deep into what happened, a lot of it's tied back to our leadership or how
absolutely
the attitude was back
in
the firehouse.
That's correct. Absolutely. You know, and to respond back to the question by Eddie, the answer is it's our lieutenants and captains of today, but how prepared are they and how trained are they? You know, I got another great quote that's a favorite of mine. You want to hear it?
Go.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
You're back at Radio at Firehouse.com. I'm Billy Goldfeder, your host of Through the Smoke, and we're talking to Chief Rick Lasky about his new book, A Firefighter's Love for the Job. And we've had some pretty interesting discussions on that. And again, I want to reiterate, whether you're the chief or the firefighter, whoever you are out there, there's a major, major need for some sort of a program. And I know when you say nationally required, people go insane and all that kind of crap. But, you know, we're still working on hose connections, and we started that argument a year ago, and we can't get that, a century ago, and we can't get that standardized. But can you imagine the impact we would have in the fire service if there was one national program for company officers, paid, volunteer, career, whatever you are, that we would have to take and offer a number of ways you can take it? So anyway, we're talking with Rick about his book. So Rick, tell us about the chapters. Let's kind of run through the chapters real quick. And tell us the title of the chapter and a brief description, and I'll appropriately interrupt as I feel it's time.
Well, there's 12, and this kind of came, again, Billy, out of just some thoughts and ideas, and let's start back at the beginning. Let's start with a good base, and that's, again, going through the first chapter is our mission, and we really take a look at what we're all about and where the fire service came from, and the fact that we are the jacks of all trade and the masters of them all, because we have to be. That's what the public expects. Everything they've thrown at us, we've taken, and unfortunately a lot of our young firefighters will ask, well, how much more are they going to give us to do? Well, to be honest, as much as we can take, because I'm not willing to give up, you know, hazmat to the private sector or technical rescue. We need to be fighting for everything we have.
But as they're asking us, but Rick, as they're asking us to do things, they've got to be reasonable with the resources.
Well, and that's the other part of that is, and when we get to a little bit later with the responsibility of those chiefs, is to fight for staffing that you and I and a whole bunch of us and our, you know, family of instructors, I call it, fight for and remind people that you've got to fight for the staff and you've got to fight for the funding. And when I get to the last chapter, there's kind of an interesting story because there never was 12 parts. I added that out of frustration with a politician I ran into while delivering a keynote. But
you talk about justifying the staffing and all, where I just obviously interrupted and I said that they've got to give us the resources. At the same time, we have to act like we need them. We can't fight going on EMS calls. We can't fight doing pub ed. We can't fight doing inspections. We can't complain and whine about all these other things if we're asking for more people, because they'll see us sitting around doing nothing. And like it or not, city managers and fire chiefs have got to show some sort of a benefit by bringing on more people.
Well,
and we can kick and scream all we want, saying it'll save our lives. But then if they look at our statistics, they'll find out in a lot of cases it has nothing to do with it. Half of us are dying because of heart and medical-related issues. So we got to strike that balance, you know?
Exactly, Billy. Exactly. And that's the point, you know, I've made several times throughout the book and just with visiting with people, is exactly what you're saying is, you know, for years we've sat in a firehouse kind of like, all right, and let them come to us. And the cops, and I was a police officer, and I appreciate what they do. We've both got kind of the same goal and mission, just two different avenues.
You were a police officer?
Yes, I was.
Well, I'm glad the counseling
against.
The counseling helped you figure that problem out.
But you know, they've kind of got us, you know, when it comes to marketing our mission. They go out and they scare people with crime, and they go out and they get involved and they do things, and they get, you know, literally about $3.5 billion a year in funding, and we're fighting to hang on to what we've got.
Right.
And instead of going out, one of my captains, who just retired with 35 years, told the guys here, the more stuff you do, the more stuff you get. And kind of when I get to one of the chapters at the end here about marketing your fire department, I know the word marketing kind of makes some people, you know, in the way it makes their teeth itch sometimes,
right,
like customer
right.
service. My dad says we didn't call customer service in the 50s, 60s. We called it take care of the family.
It was doing our job, yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's kind of something we can jump to in a little bit. But, it, you know, we start off with our mission and kind of getting back to where we all started and kind of where it all, you know, we used to just fight fires and then we moved up and we started doing first aid and we got into hazmat. And you can kind of go through the long list of all the things that we do. And the very next section we move into and the next chapter is the firefighter. And we talk about what it takes and what kind of person it takes to be able to do what we're doing.
Can you summarize what you are talking about? What type of person does it take?
I'm talking about someone who values family. If you've got someone who values family and promotes family values, because that's what we're all about. Somebody asked me a long time ago on a news show in the morning here, if I could sum the fire service up in one word, what would it be? And I said, that's easy, family. Everything we do affects someone's family. And if you treat people like family, if you treat their home or their business, their car, whatever, like it was yours, or like it was one of, you know, the members of your family's possessions, then the attitude, then the care, then the, you know, it's kind of like guys, Billy, that go to nursing homes and they get frustrated and I'm like, you know, whether you've went there four times today or not, that's someone's grandmother or grandpa, and
yeah.
you'd be sitting on my desk telling me I'm going to go over to this other department and get into it because they didn't take care of my mom or my dad.
Right.
So we need that firefighter who obviously has that. If they're watching shows on television, you know, Rescue Me and some other ones, and kind of being misled as to what goes on in the firehouse. We had some post 9/11 firefighters that thought a lot of what they saw on TV was it, and they said they got in here and they go, "This is hard. We're not just sitting around a firehouse waiting for the bell to go off like the little golden books we read years ago to our kids."
Well, let me jump back a minute, Rick. This is something that's near and dear to me, and I'm sure a lot of listeners. How do you determine that this candidate has good values? That's such a subjective way of measuring. I mean, I sort of know what you're talking about, but how does the chief, the commissioner, the deputies, the captains, whoever does the hiring, how do they look for that right candidate? And maybe there is no one solid answer, but I'd be interested in your opinion.
Well, and some of that comes down to you're just going to have to go with your gut feeling. But we've got, you know, some specific questions.
I agree with that, too.
Well, and it's what, you know, sometimes you're taking a chance, and some people can come in and paint a really good picture. I think on your panel you have to have somebody who's really good at reading people. You know, my wife has always said, you know, he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer, and he may play a dumb fireman on TV, but he knows how to read people.
Yeah.
and can spot a BSer and all that. I think when you ask questions about why the fire service, what would being a firefighter, you know, mean to you? And even if they're currently a firefighter, explain to me what the brotherhood means. And it's interesting to hear the responses, because some people have some, you know, some things that are rehearsed, obviously. Some kind of are guessing and struggling. And I think if you do a good background, if you do, you know, if you've got
I'll tell you what, that's it. You talk to Gordon Graham, a buddy in crime here. He'll tell you it starts there. And you know, I just had a firefighter tell me he was given a 100-page background form to fill out, and I was like, amen.
Well, and we're pretty, Billy, we're pretty extensive here. When we get down to the interview, we've got a really good idea between, you know, the polygraph and the background that our
gotta
do
background, yeah.
And we kind of pry without getting into where you cross over those lines of things you can't discuss and violate someone's rights, obviously. But I want to make sure we're hiring somebody. We're not going to send them into someone's home where they're going to steal something or treat someone in a, you know, just wrong. And I think that's kind of what you have to look for. To put my finger on one thing, and I agree with you on that as well, obviously, is it's hard. Sometimes you got to go with your gut feeling, but then that's what our evaluations and probationary periods and other things are set up for, in the way of, okay, now you got to prove to us. You got to show us, because 11 months and 29 days from now, I'm going to be sitting across from you going,
right.
You know, dude, we got to let you go because of this, and this.
Well, and it shouldn't be a surprise to them either.
No,
it shouldn't be a surprise. They should know it's coming, the weekly meetings of that first year and all that stuff. You know, before we jump to Chapter 3, Rick, about the evaluations, and that guy, we could do a whole show on that. Some of them are so subjective, but really an evaluation should never be a surprise.
No.
And when you get your evaluation, you go, you know, you're in shock. Well, that's because the officer didn't communicate with you all along, and you know, it's a whole other subject.
You're constantly being assessed. While we're on the subject of the firefighter in that chapter, one of the things I mention is your legacy begins the moment you walk in the door. You begin to build your legacy the moment, you know, and from the moment you walk in the door, your reputation, your everything that's being talked about, looked at, painted, etched in stone about you is starting the moment you walk in the door.
Right.
And what kind of attitude and what kind of go-getter you are. But it also, again, takes having a company officer who defines those expectations. But you are being assessed. It is not a, you know, we're going to sit down and go through this, because you know it as well as I do. I've gotten evaluations from some of the officers that put down, does okay, fine. I'm like, no, wait a minute. And I'll kind of sneak up on him and say, how does Billy do on the fire ground? Oh, Billy's incredible, man. He buries up with the best of them, always taking, well, does he take care of his tools? Well, yeah, he does. And he'll go out for an hour about him. And I'll ask him, so why couldn't you put like 3 or 4 lines down in each section of his performance evaluation?
Right.
Well, I've known Billy for 20 years. Well, then you should have plenty of stuff to put down.
Yeah.
But also,
the other side of the coin of that is, if you put too much down, you get yourself in trouble.
Well,
I don't want to turn this into an evaluation show.
Yeah, no.
But man, there's a lot to talk about on evaluations.
But well, if we're going to talk about the firefighter and what's expected of them,
got to evaluate them
exactly. And yep. it starts with good backgrounds and hiring the right people from the very beginning, and that comes back to the rookie. And again, what John and I are doing with just one particular segment, preparing for your firefighter's first day as the company officer. There's a list of things you need to have for that first day and then following. What are you going to do? Otherwise, you're allowing them to just kind of make up their own mind and it's back to that, what school? Well, you're doing a captain's
academy. Otherwise, they're going to be a rudderless ship.
Exactly.
Have you seen what Bernalillo County, New Mexico has put out, and I'll try and attach a link here to our show, but they've got a PowerPoint program that's available to anybody, and like I said, if you look at the bottom of your screen here, we'll give you a link so any of the listeners can go look at this. But it's basically it's a program about what your etiquette should be as a firefighter, what it's like, what's expected of you. It's kind of neat. I think it's probably about a 50-60 PowerPoint program that, again, anybody can grab and take a look at, but it's interesting that people, and yourself included, Rick, are now talking about from the first day. They need to understand where we've been so they can understand where they're going and things like that, the cultures, our values and things like that. So Chapter 3, what's that all about?
Chapter 3 is about the company officer, and this is where, again, we get down to these are the guys that have a chance to make a difference. These are the guys that have the ability to really set the tempo for what we're doing. Again, there are several, you know, areas of responsibility we have to take as chiefs when it comes to providing a process, whether it's a clash through the National Fire Academy or you do your own company officer academy in-house. These are the guys that have a right. And what's frustrating, it's been over the years, is to hear a lot of our officers say, well, they won't listen. It's the Generation X, Y, LMNOP, whatever.
It has all sorts of excuses, right?
Exactly. Well, you know, and it's their parents' fault. Well, stop blaming their parents. And it kind of comes down to, defining those expectations again. You have a right to tell them. They can grieve you on all kinds of things and violation of rights and being treated unfairly. They're not going to be able to grieve you for sitting down with them and explaining to them what your expectations are of them in the way of job performance and love for the job. And it's back to that whole pride and ownership, love for the job. That sums it all up. And taking care of each other, first of all. And Eddie Enright, one of my mentors, just retired from Chicago as a deputy district chief. Incredible man, 38 years, used to say, you know, if you follow the 3 F's, firefighters, fire apparatus, and firehouse, you know, take care of those 3 in that order. Take care of each other. Take care of your rig.
It'll fall through.
It'll fall into line.
Yeah.
This is not right. You said earlier, this is not rocket science. This is pretty easy stuff. And I think we've gotten so technical. We've gotten so complicated. Bruno has a way of always taking things that are so complicated. He's the Winnie the Pooh in that whole group dynamics thing. He can take things and just simplify
sure.
it, and you go, you want to hit yourself on the head and say,
why didn't I think of that? Sure.
Exactly. But if our officers aren't going to sit down, Billy, and we used to give orders, if they're not going to define their expectations, share the history, if they're not going to play that role as a mentor, it's all going to go away. If they're not going to be honest about what's killing us, you know, earlier you mentioned numbers. When are we going to start to see, you know, it's sad that, you know, there's no laser beams killing us. There's no new fire.
No, we keep getting killed the same way. We keep dying the same way, sure.
Exactly. So if we're not going to sit down and share, and we're not going to sit down and explain those things, we do something, and I cover it in a later chapter, called the Line of Duty Death Book Report Drill. And it's along the same lines what you've been preaching for a long time is, you know, we give a particular shift in a firehouse. Here's your scenario. Here's the NIOSH reports. Here's the magazine articles.
Right.
I want you to do about a 20-minute presentation on the contributing factors. Compare it to Louisville and what we do here. And I don't care if you sit around a kitchen table or you do it in the training room.
Absolutely.
You're
compare
whole
what happened in that town so it doesn't happen in your town.
Exactly. And, Billy, we've already saved one of our guys' lives here with it. And it's not just fires. It's heart attacks. It's electrocutions. It's driving. And it's turned out to be a year-long process where once a month we're doing these drills. And one of the shifts, one of the stations had the rookie do the presentation. Well, the two captains supported him. But we had one of our firefighters at a fire after leading out with a 2.5, start feeling cruddy, took his coat off, still felt cruddy, took his bunker pants off, still went and sat in a cab, turned all the air conditioning vents on him, still feeling bad, said, oh, my God, I'm going to sit up here and die just like the firefighter I heard about this morning.
Yeah, yeah.
Went out, the medics hooked him up, took him. He had 95% blockage of his widowmaker. And he's here. He's a great guy, and he's an incredible officer. But you know, we're sharing, and if it wasn't for people like Dave McGrail from Denver, who was willing to write about Mark Langvert in that situation,
right.
Instead of hiding things,
sharing that information,
exactly.
That's critical.
But that
hey, let's take a quick break here.
Go ahead.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're listening and chatting with Chief Rick Lasky, and a firefighter's love for the job.
Is it sometimes a little hard to see through the smoke? Do fire service, rescue, and EMS issues work you up just a bit? Maybe more than just a bit? If they don't, check your pulse. It's normal for firefighters and responders to get worked up over hot issues when you love the job so much. Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, Firehouse.com commentator and Firehouse Magazine columnist, hosts Through the Smoke, an internet broadcast and podcast that addresses issues impacting all firefighters, such as safety, health, and morale. Don't ignore the issues and maintain the status quo. Take an interest in issues that impact you, the frontline responder. Join Billy, special guests, and firefighters around the country and the world regularly on Through the Smoke, only on Firehouse.com.
Hey, you're back on radio at firehouse.com. This is Through the Smoke, and I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. We're talking with Rick Lasky about his book, Firefighter's Love for the Job. And basically, it's just a good discussion about the stuff that most of us are always talking about. And it's great to get some of Rick's perspective. I have said and continue to maintain that the role of the company officer is the most important role anywhere in the fire service. You can have a great chief who has all sorts of great ideas and things to get done, but if the company officer doesn't follow through, it doesn't happen. On the other hand, you can have a not-so-great chief, but a good company officer, and things still get done. So, Rick, let's talk about Chapter 4. What's going on there?
Well, in Chapter 4, we start to get into the chief. You know, we started with the mission, went through our firefighter, the company officer, and now we get into the chief and what it takes to get to what I always call the big chair and what's going to happen when you get there. And what we continually mention, Billy, is just that this is the person has the ability to kind of work from behind the scenes. Instead of being a credit grabber, being able to do those things that support your department. And another saying I like is egos eat brains. And if you've got a chief who's more worried about themselves, building their resume and things like that, then you're really not going to go anywhere. And some of this takes being able to sit down and check your ego and accept the fact that you don't know everything and that some of your best people out there are the ones riding backwards, and go from there. You know, it's the same thing of leading by example. It goes back to that managers enforce
sure.
rules and leaders promote values. But probably the most important thing as a chief is remember where you came from.
Well, and that's where I wanted to go with that, is the chiefs remember where they came from, but also, just as importantly, the firefighters have got to remember that in most, in almost every case, other than a few rare ones, the chief has been where you are, and the chief has stretched those lines, and the chief has crawled down hallways. Now, sadly, in this day and age, we're seeing actually a fire department not far from me at all. They have a deputy chief who's never been a line firefighter, never rode the front seat of an engine, and unfortunately, due to some absolutely insane decisions, either by city managers or courts or whatever, certain people are getting promoted to positions where they really are in dangerous positions of hurting our people. But in most cases, the fire chief has been there. So while, yes, the chiefs have to also remember their people, those below need to understand, those on the line, those in the fires, understand your chief's been there too. So that, I think that would lead to a more harmonious relationship.
Well, and it's a two-way street, exactly, Billy, where the guys need to realize, and some of them do as they mature in their career and accept more responsibility, that when that happens, certain decisions have to be made, and it comes down to making decisions because they're right, not because they're popular. And sometimes the guys don't understand it. But at the same time, to remind some of the chief officers, and we do it here once in a while, that, look, you and I were the same thing. We were at the kitchen table slamming our fists the hardest when we were firefighters.
That's right.
Remember that it's normal. Don't wear your heart on your shirt sleeve, and just, you know, always do what's right and keep the guys' best interests at heart, and learn to accept their best, you know, efforts. Succession plan.
Sort of like a big
working.
Marriage, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is, and communication and a little bit of understanding goes a long way. How about Chapter 5?
Well, and we get into the next one where we discuss our two families, the first family, the one at home, and the second family, the one at the firehouse. And we get into defending our family and not allowing someone to tarnish our image. I love firehouse.com. It's an incredible source of information, as well as, you know, the firefighterclosecalls.com, but it's frustrating, and I know it's done for that reason, to see sometimes when some of our people have strayed, and it's up to us to police our own people, and if you know somebody's doing something that's wrong, to correct them right then. But it also comes down to us making the right decisions. We're in the business, Billy, of managing the consequences of other people's actions, but also our own decisions, and we need to take care of each other. And if we're not taking care of the family at home, then we're suffering at work. And if we're not taking care of the family at work, we're suffering at home. So it just comes down to making good decisions, based on the values and priorities of both our families.
Right. You know, and again, here we go again with the company officer issue. So many, I don't know if I can put a number to this, but many company officers are afraid to confront their people. You know they're doing this wrong, whether it's officially or if they're doing something they shouldn't be doing, but they got to get along with their people. I don't want to rock the boat. I want to tell these guys what to do. You know what? You may be saving somebody's career and their life and their family by taking action right away when you're aware of something. So that's kind of important to keep in mind. I know many officers or many issues, we've looked at a lot of case studies where a problem has gone on and on and on, and, well, yeah, I knew about it, but I didn't want to fight with this guy. He's always filing grievances, or it's not worth fighting with them, or something like that.
And it comes down to that, Billy, making decisions and taking actions because they're right, not popular.
Having the courage to make those decisions.
The courage to lead.
And
it kind of gets us right into the next chapter, and you and I have talked about
this
one several times, is sweating the small stuff, which was the keynote the following year in 2002 that I did. And there were some books published, one in particular that said, don't sweat the small stuff because it's all small stuff. Unfortunately, in our business, the small stuff is often what gets us hurt and killed.
Right.
You show up with half the air in your air pack you're supposed to, it's a very bad day. And when you don't have O2 in your O2 cylinder and someone hands you their kit, it's
sure.
Not right.
Well, what do you talk about specifically in that chapter? What's the intent of that chapter, sweating the small stuff?
Well, it's to get people back, Billy, to the things that we talk about all the time, and nobody wants to hear, they get tired of hearing, back to the basics. But some of the small things are establishing the SOPs and SLGs, and how good are you at your hose line advancement?
Yeah.
Understanding.
Yeah, sure. Just refocus.
Yeah. Refocus.
Yeah.
I mean, building construction fire behavior. One of my mentors, Jack McCaslin, taught me when I was 18, if you want to be a good firefighter, Rick, you need to know building construction fire behavior. What the fire's going to do with the building's going to do with the fire. The rest of the stuff, you know, is actually meaningless to a point if you don't understand the first two. But your SCBA, your tools, portable radios, do you have them and do you know how they work? Understanding your uniforms. Does your pass device work? Does your flashlight work?
Right.
You know, I've got guys, Billy, that'll argue. I'll say, go out and get yourself your own flashlight. Well, you know what? Use the department.
Yeah, if you won't issue it to me, I ain't carrying it. Well, okay, dumbass, then you don't have a flashlight. Yeah.
And another one of my good buddies, Tom Freeman, the chief in Lyle Woodridge, says, you know, he has said for 20 years, you know, don't be so stubborn as to let him put on your tombstone the bastards wouldn't buy me a flashlight.
Right.
And, you know, and do you believe in RIT? And rapid intervention doesn't suck. It does work. But it's your attitude, it's communications in the firehouse, how you doing with your people staging, the
very
three
good.
F's we talked about. So that's sweating the small stuff, which moves us right into the next one, changing shirts, the promotion, and talking
there
about that company officer. You know, and in there, Billy, we talk about the decision to promote. Why do I want to promote? Can I do the job? Can I make the lifestyle change?
I'll tell you, I'm glad you're asking that question, because for years I've been saying that the first step in a promotional process is you asking yourself, do I really want to do this job? And what will happen is your ego will often override that. But you got to understand that once you become that company officer, you're not necessarily their buddy or pal. And, you know, Chase Sargent does a great program with his buddy to boss presentation. And really, it's a big deal going from one of the gang to being one of the bosses. And in a volunteer fire department, you may be going from a peer to now supervising your aunt, your uncle, or your cousin. So,
and Billy, it comes down to that, what we've been talking about in the way of accepting responsibility. And the example I use, and I witness this firsthand, is standing in the emergency room after having a firefighter fall through the roof. This is our company who's closed Thanksgiving dinners, you know, communions, birthdays, parties,
sure. Right.
Side jobs, everything, and we can't wait for his wife to get there to wrap our arms around her, be there and support her, and we're anxious, the anxiety of just wanting her to get there so we can be there for her. And when she finally arrives, you know, our lieutenant walks up, and he's going to wrap his arms around her and say, we're here for you. She looks him right in the eye and says, I thought you were supposed to protect my husband.
That's it. That's the everybody goes home theory.
Yeah,
yep.
And it ruined him for 2 years, and then he retired. It was like, if you're willing to hear that, you know, then we need to check and see exactly why we got into this, if we did it just for the money or for...
Taking care of your people means sometimes you got to be tough and sometimes you got to piss them off. But that's what I'm talking about, that first step, and it sounds like that chapter is going to cover that area. How about chapter 8?
Chapter 8 has to do with, and the first time I kind of read this teaching a class with him, he kind of looked at me like I was speaking Chinese, and that was what September 11th did to us and for us. And it's kind of one of those, and I kind of get on it at the end, about never forgetting means never forgetting. And, you know, all of us lost so many, I mean, there was so much talent, so many good people that were lost on that day, and we can't take and roll back the hands of time that we wish we could. But I'm not willing to let Andy and Ray and all our friends end up on just a plaque somewhere. I'm not willing to let their sacrifices and their efforts go in vain. And there's some things that came out of that we're better for because of their sacrifices. We actually did get some funding finally. Now, though it's not enough, we got some. We actually did see people calling each other brother and sister more and hugging each other more and we realized some of who our politicians were that were behind us and some that aren't. And basically that whole never forgetting means never forgetting, it kind of woke a lot of people up. I'm not trying to justify what happened by no means. It was a god-awful, most horrible day in the history of the fire service.
Of course, right.
But Billy, I don't think we're willing, and I know you're not, to let them go away without trying to have them help us. They can still help us get things done. They're going to continue to teach people.
Well, they all left legacies, and we can learn from what they shared with us prior to their murders, or we can ignore it and move on and worry about how comfortable our recliners are. It's kind of, you know, up to you.
Well, and it goes back to not just September 11th, never forgetting means never forgetting. You know,
any of the lost.
Yeah, I mean, if you're willing to just let them be a picture on the wall,
then
you should be ashamed of yourself.
Every one of us has, certainly with September 11th, but I think almost every firefighter has a line of duty death, whether it occurred to you directly, which is the most painful, or one you simply read about. But every one of us has one or two or even more that impacted us. And by keeping that in your heart and then taking from what your heart into your brain and making it actions, that's how you never forget. You know, the brotherhood and hey brother and sister and all this stuff is good and it's nice, but a lot of times, Rick, it's words. It has to be actions, and it has to be what's behind those words to truly define the brotherhood and the sisterhood. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the things we really hit hard and heavy with the whole back in the chapter with the firefighter is, you know, what the brotherhood means to me. And it's more than just a sticker on the windshield of your car.
That's right. Yeah, there used to be a T-shirt years ago that said BMA, Brotherhood My Ass, which really said a lot. It's more than a sticker. It's more than a hug. It's more than words. It's got to be the actions.
And we're not using the people that are out there. There's already mechanisms in place. The National Fall and Firefighters Foundation, the International Association of Firefighters, to me, is the most underused, wonderful tool that's out there in the way of wellness, it's just information in general, and we don't utilize them, I think, as much. And
absolutely. The IFF, the IFC has got some outstanding programs now, too. There's so much out there, and with the Internet these days, you can get anything.
Absolutely. And that's kind of where we, you know, it's the September 11th, never forgetting, you know, let's wake up and let's really take a look at what we're doing and how we're taking care of each other and this whole brotherhood, sisterhood thing and really take it seriously. And no, they're not just words, that there's something behind them.
Exactly.
And I think how we get there, Billy, is through a couple of things that follow at the next couple of chapters. And the one is the ceremonies. Bringing back the ceremonies that stoke the flames of tradition. I'm not talking the tradition of killing firefighters doing stupid and silly things. I'm talking about the tradition that celebrates our heritage.
Promotional ceremonies, and instead of just handing somebody their badge,
exactly.
Maybe invite the family and stuff, yeah.
And we do that, the collar pinning, and all that is described in that chapter from start to finish is all for the new firefighter, the promotion, the retirement ceremony. How despicable is it to have someone work 25, 30, 35 years for you, and their last day they just leave without having some celebration? And we've kind of screwed this up a while ago. We go to funerals, and I serve as a funeral chief here in our area just because I want to make sure things go right and we do the right thing, when God forbid that happens. But we've kind of messed up this honor and paying a tribute to someone, Billy. I think we should be paying a tribute to them at their funeral, thanking them for being a part of our family and for what they did and their contributions. But the time to honor someone is right now.
Sure.
While they're
here.
Don't wait. Don't talk to a gravestone. Don't talk to the sky. Honor people while they're right here, right now, today.
That's a great point. And so for the listeners that are kind of absorbing this discussion we're having, when you bring on people, there's a ceremony. When they graduate from rookie school, maybe there's a ceremony, and not just for them. Have them invite their friends, their family, their relatives, all that kind of stuff. And then when they get promoted, you know, one of the people I think is one of the best fire chiefs in this country, Jack McElfish, always makes it a point to do that, always has the ceremonies, and always invites the family. And, boy, does he get great buy-in that way. And he's not doing it for that. That's a byproduct of something he genuinely believes in. How about the final chapters, Rick?
Well, the final chapters, after we move out of ceremonies, comes to marketing your fire department. And this is, I can explain this in about 5 seconds. It's the stuff that gets you more stuff. It's all the programs we should be doing, the reading programs, you know, the literacy programs, all those different things that get us more stuff. And basically that's it. Think and market your fire department. Go out and tell the public about all that you do.
And think before you whine and bitch and complain that this is not my job description and all that, because the more we're out there, as you're saying, the more opportunity we can gain in providing those services and gain personally.
And what's frustrating is the very people that control the money, that control the purse strings, are the people sometimes we go to say it bluntly, take a big dump on their shoes. We're like, well, why aren't they giving us more stuff? Well, look at how you treat them. Sometimes you have to be smarter than the stone.
Right.
And that kind of brings us to the last two, is making it all happen and take care of number one is the 11th chapter, which originally was the end, and that was, you know, the final chapter in the book was embracing success and learning from your successes as well as your failures and taking care of yourself for real and each other and doing a core values check. But the very last one kind of happened again by accident, just out of frustration with a politician who stood up at a conference and talked about his great relationship with the fire department and was arguing with me, calling the fire service a dark hole where the money goes, and we don't see anything before that. And I changed my whole speech and got up there and I went on a rant about people that have forgotten. And I'm talking about firefighters and fire chiefs. We got all these memorial stickers on helmets and cars and trucks. Yet we're back in some places sticking it to each other. We found it easy to forget.
Absolutely.
And these people that want to take pictures with us and use us to get more votes. Now, there's a lot of awfully wonderful and great politicians out there, and I don't even call them politicians. I call them friends of our family, you know, Kurt Weldon, the congressman, and we've got a couple senators here that are incredible. But it comes back to, have you forgotten those that went before us, what we're all about, everything we just talked about in 11 chapters, have you forgotten all that stuff? It's kind of like a wake-up call, and it's kind of that finale of, take a look hard at yourself in the mirror, and if you can walk away from there saying, you know, I need to improve, or I need to just look at this as a confirmation I'm moving in the right direction, that's what that's all about.
Cool. Well, it sounds like it's going to be an interesting read. I'm certainly looking forward to checking it out. For those of you listening, I haven't seen the book yet. All I've done is talk to Rick about it, so I'm anxious, as any of you would be, I would think, to get a copy of this and check it out and see what he's got to say. It's all applicable stuff. We'll be right back to wrap this up.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Hey, we're back for our wrap-up through the smoke, radio at firehouse.com. This is Billy Goldfeder. We're talking to Chief Rick Lasky about a firefighter's love for the job. I want to mention that if you're interested in this book, you can go to www.5alarmleadership.com. It's all spelled out, no numbers, www.5alarmleadership.com, and you can check it out. So, Rick, a final thought.
Well, I just appreciate the time being able to spend a few minutes with you here, Billy, and it's, you know, whether it's pride and ownership or all the wonderful things you're doing. I'm going to take a different spin on this. My final thought is I just want to thank you for everything you do for the fire service, brother. I mean,
nothing else to do. So.
Well, but Billy, you define the brotherhood, and more importantly, you define the word selflessness. And you are one of those people that's just making an incredible difference out there.
I
love you,
that.
And I know a lot of people hold you at such a very high regard. And I think sometimes when you do as much as you do, you get caught up in so much that you forget about just what an impact you're having. And here we're talking about pride and ownership, the love for the job, and people that make a difference. And you're one of them, brother, so I can't thank you.
Appreciate that. You're very kind. Pride and ownership, a firefighter's love for the job. You need to ask yourselves, do you really love the job? And you know, what you're doing for the job, what you're giving. And I tell my kids this all the time, and I mean my own children, what are you doing to give back? And I ask that to the same firefighters that are listening out there. What are you doing to give back? And if your attitude is, oh, I do enough at that place, well, then you're probably in the wrong business. You need to think about what you're doing to give back to make this job better than you found it when you came on board. I did want to mention earlier that our hearts and prayers go out to Community Fire District firefighter Cindy Shunke. That's in St. Louis County, Missouri. Cindy suffered very serious burns last week when she fell into the basement of a fire, fell through the floor. She was attempting to actually rescue one of her captain's moms who was trapped in that fire, so a kind of unusual twist. And Rick, we talk about family. There's a real, intense example of how close family can get sometimes, where they responded to this particular fire. So again, our hearts and prayers go out to the Community Fire Protection District firefighter Cindy Shunke, out in St. Louis County, Missouri, and wish her a very quick recovery. Burns suck. The one thing we'll always do is try and avoid getting ourselves burned. Here's an example where she was trying to save someone's life, and to intensify it, it was one of her captain's moms who did tragically lose her life in that fire. We look forward to seeing many of you out at FDIC in just a couple of weeks. As usual, it's a great time of all of us getting together and learning and spending time, not unlike going to Baltimore for Firehouse Expo. As well, we'll be there as well this summer, but FDIC is coming up next. And some of you have asked about the class that we're doing on Monday and Tuesday. It's a hot workshop called Firefighter Deaths, Injuries, and Survival. And this is a seminar, not an outdoor class. It's going to be extremely intense and very in-depth, studying some line-of-duty deaths of some specific firefighters. And we'll have the chief of Keokuk, Iowa, Mark Wessel, the chief of Gloucester City, New Jersey, Bill Glassman, and the chief of Novato, California, Jeff Meston, who are going to sit and spend time with the attendees in this workshop, sharing information that you otherwise would not be getting other than directly from the mouths of the chiefs who were in charge and involved in the loss of their firefighters. So that may be something you want to come by and see us, but there's loads of great programs out there. Just whatever you do, go to some classes, spend some time learning. And after you're done, spend time talking to other firefighters to see how they're doing it over there at the different fire departments that we like to share. Well, you know, how you doing this training? Well, that's how we do it here. It's a great opportunity to learn from each other. I want to dedicate this show to Christopher Kangas's memory, junior firefighter in Pennsylvania who lost his life. We talked about him earlier as a member of the Brookhaven Fire Company. No matter what the circumstances were, he was responding and he was trying to help. And for that, we salute Chris Kangas's memory and wish his family a peaceful life after the loss of such a wonderful young man. Again, thanks again, Rick. We appreciate you being here this week. And we'll look forward to seeing you at some of the shows and conferences coming up. And to those of you listening in, just a thanks from me. The response to the show has been incredible. It's gratifying and heartwarming to know so many people are that interested in the stuff we're talking about here. This is Billy Goldfeder. This is Through the Smoke, and we're out of here.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.